You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 4 June. We've got local Q1 GDP data later this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Motete Tulare from RMB. The Rand seems to be expecting a centralist coalition government, and certainly it seems to be liking it. Wandile Shalobo from Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Master plan for agriculture. And again, which political parties in this coalition are best going to drive it? It got a bit stuck with avian flu and other issues. And then Riza Ismail from Prescient Investment Management. We're going to talk around that, what he expects from GDP data and the bond market. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Pick and Pay paid booted CEO Boone 16 million rand settlement, taking his pay for the last financial year to 25.3 million rand. CNBC, oil falls more than 3% as OPEC Plus plans to phase out voluntary production cuts. Morning markets, US was green. S&P 0.1% higher, while the Nasdaq closed a third of a percent up. The East is mostly green, actually quite mixed. Sydney just slipped red, 0.01% down. Tokyo off 0.5%. Hong Kong up 0.25%, and Tencent up 0.4%. Commodities are mixed. Gold is green at 2,366. Brent, 77.82. Platinum, 1,024. And palladium green at 931. Rand is 18.56. Bitcoin, 69,200. And top 40, looking for a green open, 190 points or 0.25% to the upside.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Motete Tulare. He's head of FX execution at RMB. Motete, appreciate the early morning time. We chatted, it was about a month ago, talking around the elections and the potential volatility. You at the time pointed out that there's also a lot else happening. We had our MPC last week, ECB this week, FOMC next week. There's a lot there for the currency. But certainly as we've got the coalition talks ongoing, and expectations that we're probably going to or maybe get a centralist government, the Rand seems to be strengthening on this after having gone out to 1880-odd back at 1856. Is that a fair shout? And could a centralist government ultimately be good for our Rand in the immediate?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, you're very much right. I mean, the Rand has strengthened after swinging between, you know, some gains and losses. Obviously, as the markets braced for further upheaval in the country, especially after last week's elections, produced no outright winner. Now, obviously, the outcome of the ongoing coalition talks remain highly uncertain. We've seen the ANC falling short of parliamentary majority for the first time since it took power 30 years ago. Now, the elections continue to impact emerging market assets. I mean, if you cast your eye out to Mexico, I mean, the Mexican peso has, you know, fallen about 4% after the election results there showed the ruling party winning by a broad majority in both chambers of Congress. Now, that is a stoking concern that it will increase the state control of the economy and undermine the checks on its power. Whilst on the other side of the spectrum, you're seeing Indian stocks, they've surged to a record. And obviously that is seen after the exit poll signaled an emphatic victory for Prime Minister Modi's ruling party. Now, if you think about it, like you said, you know, the market focus this week will obviously shift towards the start of the ECB's potential rate cuts that we might see. But in addition to the, you know, central bank policy meetings happening this week, I mean, the market locally will be looking at the fallout of the election results, both in Mexico and South Africa. Now, the market locally hasn't fully priced in the risks surrounding the South African coalition talks. Now, the chances of a messy political process over the coming 13 days remains high, even if the ANC remains in power, there is every possibility that this could be weak and relatively unstable and raising concerns about policy delivery and uncertainty as well. So I think over the next 13 days, we are still going to also face a situation whereby you have what we call a headline tennis. We will be, you know, moving from one headline to the other and obviously trying to digest all of these things as and when they come out.
Yeah, and I take your point around that. It is going to be whipsaw. And of course, as we start to get leaks and rumors about potential coalitions, whichever way it might go, that's probably going to add even more volatility. We'll leave that there. Mateto Tolari, head of FX execution at RMB, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Your sense around the rand, would a centralist government see the rand stronger, or would it be a temporary blip and then continue on? Ultimately, it's a weakening trend. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Wandile Shalobe. He's Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, appreciate the time today. The Agricultural and Agro-Processing Master Plan. Give us a sort of high-level view of what this plan is and what it would hope to achieve.
The Agriculture and Agro-Processing Master Plan, Simon, is a product of a co-creation of various stakeholders, government, private sector, organized agriculture and labor, all coming together and saying, we have an agricultural sector. What are some of the challenges that it faces? Where are the areas for growth? Which commodities and corridors, regions, we should be prioritizing? And coming up with this plan, which suggests that if implemented correctly, we could unlock about 30% improvement in the gross value added of South Africa's agriculture. And we could see also jobs increasing and the economic activity in the rural regions of South Africa. So in essence, this is a plan that is to drive inclusive growth, enhance the competitiveness of the South African agriculture and agro-processing sectors.
Yeah, and jobs, particularly in rural areas, hugely important. So from that, two questions then come to mind to me. One is, how old is the plan and how has it been progressing?
The plan, Simon, was launched around about May 2022. Mm-hmm. There's been some elements of implementation here and there, but not in an aggressive and coherent manner that one would have liked for a number of reasons. One, just after it was launched in the following year, South Africa was hit by immense load shedding, which put a strain in the agricultural sector, given that 100% of our fruit and vegetables are under irrigation. And of course, the poultry sector, dairy industry, all are dependent on electricity. So the energy was moved towards the power issues. As we were escaping the issues of power with all of the renewables, that many people devoted a lot of resources into installing and other alternative energy sources, we were then hit by animal diseases, foot and mouth disease, avian influenza. All of these things, I would say, they slowed the implementation of the master plan. But I think that this time around, especially when one thinks of the new administration that will come into our sector, the core focus should be around the relentless implementation of the master plan, along some of the supportive legislation around land reform and the blended finance, which will ensure that everything that is outlined per commodity and regions perhaps could see a better rate of success.
I take your point. And I mean, yeah, you know, the avian flu, we also had some foot mouth load shedding. These are curveballs in a sense. You mentioned the new administration. As WeChat, we've done our job. We have voted. Now the political parties are negotiating coalitions. I got to say, my sense from the world out there is that an agricultural minister is, you know, most people don't think about who that would be. But this is critically important to industry because this really, notwithstanding, I mean, industries involved and communities are involved in the plan, but really a minister is going to drive this aggressively at best.
Absolutely, Simon. And I do think that you are right on putting agriculture in this context of elections, because this is a sector that always hangs out into the political discussion, particularly certain legislation. I would pinpoint here one of agriculture, as well as the issue of when we have someone to champion this master plan. My thinking when I look into this, Simon, is that we are where we are now as South Africa. And if you look at the top four parties that are trailing the ANC, mm-hmm. and you think about what's their agricultural thinking and what's their land reform thinking, two in my eyes stand out on that. The Umkhonto weSizwe Party, as well as the Economic Freedom Fighters, which have an aggressive push for expropriation without compensation, which in my view is something that is not favorable for investment, long-term inclusive growth, and job creation. But if you look at the other two parties that are there, the Democratic Alliance, as well as the IFP, on the DA, they've been implementing the policies of the South African national government in the Western Cape. So I'm inclined to think that they would continue with the master plan and the other aspects that we already have. In the IFP, if you read in their manifesto, they speak profoundly about the need for partnerships in agriculture, private sector, public sector, even communities, which is in the spirit of the master plan. They also talk about the need for supporting agricultural interventions, which I think a blended finance that is underway between government and the banks is something that mirrors that. But where there's ambiguity in the IFP plan is that on expropriation, they say, look, you can expropriate with some form of compensation. And I think then that I would say their message in the DA and IFP is more in line with what we have. While if you look at the MK and the EFF, I do think that you get a stark contrast of these policies, which then again would say whoever is in the coalition, one would like someone who respects property rights, who drives the master plan, and cognizant for the needs for growth and jobs in rural South Africa.
I take your point. And of course, land reform is, I don't want to say it's the heart of agriculture, but it's an important component. As you say, strong property rights. But also, I mean, the government is the largest landowner, and it's that release of land, importantly, with title deed to individuals.
I would say some, not necessarily the largest in the country, but a substantial land that is there that could be transferred to people. Already, under Minister Didiza, we have seen that in the roughly 2.5 million hectares that was in the government hands, they've already began releasing some of that with title deeds. The hope then is that either Minister Didiza returns the department or there's a change in the leadership. Whoever comes in, they work with the Director General as well as the deputies that are there to continue with that process of releasing land with title deeds, because we have to strengthen the tenure so that we attract the investment in the sector and we continue to ensure that we maximize its potential for growth and job creation.
Yeah, and that's perhaps where the IFP also comes in, because of course most of the KwaZulu-Natal land is held in a trust managed by the King, and that gets maybe a little more complicated. But we'll leave it there. Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of SA. Always appreciate the insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Reza Ismail, Head of Bonds at Prescient Investment Management. Reza, appreciate the time today. We got Q1 GDP later today. Prepping for the interview, I thought, oh, it's going to be good because of no load shedding. Of course, we had load shedding until quite late in March anyway, so that'll more be around Q2. But your expectation for the first quarter?
Morning, and thanks very much for having me on the show. I mean, the general expectation is for the numbers to continue what I suppose is quite pedestrian trend if we just look at recent GDP prints, right? So if we look at coming off the recovery from COVID, and that was 2021, the annual GDP, that is the value of final goods that the economy produces, that was about 4.7% in real terms. That was 2021. Then things start to slow down. We go to like 1.9% for 2022. And then basically, if we look at the whole of last year, that is 2023, that slows down even more to a very meager, you know, 0.6%. So essentially, the expectation, not only my own, but a lot of the base expectation for many, many other commentators and economists is for GDP to come in quite pedestrian, you know, again, in terms of something more or less than about a percent, you know, quarter on quarter. So there's a range of ways in which GDP numbers are, of course, quoted. But I think that we're looking for something fairly anemic, fairly lackluster, once again, unfortunately.
Yeah, I get you, and I also get the unfortunate. Let's say we continue no load shedding for June. That gives us a full quarter of no load shedding, and I think that takes us back almost 2 years, perhaps longer, since we've had so long. Would that be meaningful for the second quarter GDP, or is it going to still be perhaps better, but not really great?
I think a better, but not really great, right? So what has transpired, if we look at, once again, casting our minds a little bit back, right? I mean, what are the main structural problems that the South African economy faces, right? The number one thing is obviously we've got policy uncertainty.
Yeah.
We've got low business confidence and we've got low capital formation. In other words, fixed asset investment is really quite low. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, I mean, looking back in terms of maybe the past year, I think that number in terms of fixed capital investment has been bolstered by people effectively taking their fates into their own hands by investing in alternative sources of energy, right? But these are generally quite front-loaded and generally sort of once-off investments, and they're not really that much of a springboard for growth in the future, which is what we actually critically need. All of those things very much still in play, right? And that's why I say those structural impediments, you know, remain. And when you couple that now with further uncertainties that have been introduced by the prospect of the election, notwithstanding it's now already happened, but remember we are now commenting on the first quarter GDP, of which the prospect of the elections also introduced, you know, a great deal of uncertainty, and that would have weighed also on spending and capital expansion plans, right? Not a great deal of positivity to look forward to, but there are elements where perhaps there can be some green shoots.
And certainly, I mean, as we are talking, you mentioned the election. We have now done our part. The politicians are now talking, trying to establish coalitions. Some of those, for example, around policy uncertainty, capital formation could go away. But if we quickly turn to the bond market, I mean, is it as simple as the bond market is going to say one form of coalition, and I'm going to say broadly a sort of ANC, DA, IFP would be good, and the other side, ANC, MK, EFF, would be bad? Or is that far too simplistic for the bond market?
It might sound quite reductive and simplistic, but I really think that is not actually that far from the truth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that essentially, I mean, it's the first time in some sense that it is quite uncharted waters in the sense that, I mean, this is the first time that the ANC has not managed to secure, you know, a simple majority kind of thing, right? So it will need to partner up with somebody, right?
Yeah.
The problem with the ANC is that it's got to choose the cleanest shirt, you know, out of a bunch of not so good options ideologically, let's just put it that. I'm not here to talk in absolutes, but you know, certainly from their perspectives, there's no easy win, right? Each of the potential suitors or each of the potentials that they could partner up with will have significant ideological differences. It all depends on essentially which of those choices they are going to prioritize. The market certainly, I would say, does have a preference, and that would, of course, be a partnership between, let's just say, the ANC and the little bit more centrist, you know, leaning parties. Let's call that maybe the DA, let's just say, for ease of explanation. And that would obviously be a lot more of a market palatable kind of alliance, only because of the fact that the kind of compromises that the ANC would need to make on that side are probably the kind of things that are a little bit more market friendly. You know, if we look at the other alternatives in terms of, let's say, the MK or the EFF, of course, we know that those are a little bit more left leaning. And of course, the policies there are a little bit more populist, right? So that that would not be, you know, digested by the market in the same favorable manner as perhaps a coalition with the DA, let's say.
Yeah, I take your point. They're sort of centrists, and it's a lot in the center. Yeah. It's the DA, it's the IFP, it's Razamzanzi, it's Build One South Africa. UDM's in there with three seats. It's going to be some wilder days ahead. We'll leave it there. Reza Ismail, head of bonds at Prescient Investment Management. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Philip Short yesterday. He from Flagship Asset Management, talking about the GLP-1 drug producers, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk. They prefer Novo Nordisk, but they do hold both. We ask which you prefer. 40% say you own neither. A quarter liked Eli Lilly, and the rest were split between the Novo Nordisk or holding a bit of both. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Terrible vehicle sales.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.